Some 130,000 New Mexicans are expected to receive $1,200 payments by the end of the month. Among them are many who've already exhausted their unemployment benefits. Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley will answer questions about current unemployment numbers, what unemployed New Mexicans can expect moving forward, and how his office is working to help New Mexico families keep food on the table in the new year. Then we welcome economist Dr. Jim Peach to talk about what legislators will be wrestling with in their regular session in January. What are state economists most concerned about as the pandemic continues into the new year? Call 575-646-2212 with your questions. Dr. Peach will join us a little after 1:30. We'll start with Secretary McCamley right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon. It's 1:06. This is Casey Counts. Thanks for joining us for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. In the first portion of the show today, we'll be talking about the situation for so many unemployed New Mexicans. And we welcome back Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming back on with us. You know, there's a lot to cover today, and we asked you to join us for the first half of the program. So if you have questions for Secretary McCamley, 575-646-2212 is the number to call. Let's just start by getting, you know, the picture of what things are looking like right now in terms of the numbers that you're dealing with regarding unemployed New Mexicans.
Right. So we have about 120,000 folks receiving payment right now. That number seems to have capped itself. It's not as high as the little over 150,000 mark we had in June, but it's still higher than it was about a month ago. And that's understandable because of the pause that was put into place by the governor because of the COVID spike. The governor has always said that the spread of the virus will control the actions and the risk that we're allowing into the communities because hospitals are being overloaded and we need to save people's lives. And we've been doing everything we can to process as many people as we can in the unemployment system. And we're hoping that as we contain the spread of this virus, that we can start opening things back up sooner rather than later. But we really need to continue to drive that message that people need to stay home. When they do go out, they need to wear a mask. Please don't gather in large groups. That's a really, really tough thing around the holidays. Mm-hmm. We understand that. But that is the message that really, really be driven home, because the more we get a hold of this thing, the easier it's going to be for us to open up the economy and get folks back to work. In terms of, there's a couple other things that people should probably know about. In the legislative special session that happened the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, there was about $310 million of federal money that was reapportioned to basically get into folks' pockets as directly as they can. And some of that was set up for the unemployment system. And what we did was get $1,200 payments out to everyone who was either on unemployment and getting benefits those 2 weeks surrounding Thanksgiving, or had their benefits exhaust between September 12th and that Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And so payments went out this week on that program. We've got about 120,000 payments roughly that went out on Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday night. Please remember, for anyone listening on this, that it takes 24 to 72 business hours for those $1,200 checks to get put into your account, either your debit card or your bank account. And we are having two more runs of payments, one on the 22nd and one on the 28th, because as we process people who are still kind of waiting in the queue to get processed from those 2 weeks, we'll be putting those in a list and running some more payments out. So we're doing everything we possibly can to get as many people those checks as we can. We know how important it is. We know how hurt and desperate people are right now, and we are really busting our tails to do everything we can to get the money. Last thing, can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're still waiting on Congress to decide whether or not they're going to do any kind of extension to benefits. So there's a lot of people in New Mexico that are on the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. That's for the self-employed folks, or who have an extension of their standard program. And both of those programs are set to expire at the end of the year. And we are monitoring to see what Congress does. If they pass a bill and the president signs it, we'll do everything we can to get whatever extensions they could possibly put in play as fast as we can. But we just don't know. We can't really comment on anything regarding that until they pass them.
Yeah. You know, we've been hearing that they've been close to a deal, I think, for a long time now. And then it's kind of like Lucy in the football, right? Just gets taken away there at the last moment. So,
It should have been done months ago.
I wondered about the timing on the distribution of the CARES Act funding in the states in terms of, you know, did they wait because they were waiting to see what would happen from the federal government? And then it just became clear that nothing was happening. So that's when the special session was called to kind of get this money back out into the economy.
Yeah, so that money was originally set up to really help backstop the state government because of the possibility with lower revenues coming in that it would have really affected government services. However, the state reserves, if you may have seen over in the news over the past couple weeks, have actually been doing okay. Mostly that's because oil and gas prices are a lot higher than people would have expected. And when we get about a third of our funds at the state, either directly or indirectly from the oil and gas industry, when those prices remain high, it allows us to continue to get money in. And so I think there was an understanding that we really, really, had to have help for people. And that was a decision that, hey, people need to have money in their pockets right now. And we didn't really need that backstop that we thought we were going to. And so, you know, let's make that decision. Let's get it to the businesses. Let's get it to the folks on unemployment. Let's get it into the economy to help people.
Has the workforce in the oil business been affected in a positive way because of that kind of surprise?
I don't understand your question.
Oh, in terms of the oil and gas industry workforce, you know, in terms of the amount of folks who were unemployed from that business, have we started to see a turnaround because of that, you know, elevated price that we weren't necessarily expecting?
I don't have those numbers in front of me. I do know that the mining industry as a whole, and that includes the oil and gas industry, got hit pretty hard initially and has been kind of getting people back in. I know, for instance, that the Freeport-McMoRan mines for copper are starting to look to hire people back at the beginning of the year as well. And so we are starting to see a rebound there. And hopefully, as we get this virus under control and this vaccine starts rolling out here in the next 3-4 months, we can get those numbers of COVID down and get the economy open back up. Not just here, but around the nation and around the world, and get everybody back to work.
Let's talk a little bit about this special session. There was a lot of discussion, passionate discussion, and there seemed to be an awful lot of support for the idea of getting some extra money into the hands of essential workers, especially those making less than $15 an hour. Tell us about why we weren't able to move forward on something like that and what you expect moving into the future.
Right. So creating programs like this are not like flipping on a light switch. They're very complicated. You need to figure out how you're going to determine who gets what. And so in that bill, for instance, there was no definition of what a quote-unquote essential worker was. There was not really a mechanism for us to be able to get the money into their pockets, even if, you know, we were appropriated some of it. And there were no rules set up. There was no process. So let me give you an example. When the federal government passed the CARES Act back in March, it set up pandemic unemployment assistance. This was a brand new program to help all those gig workers and contract workers that don't get unemployment standard at the standard level because they're not employees, right? They're mm-hmm. none of their taxes go into the fund. But obviously, the economy today is not the same as it was in 1935 when unemployment was set up. So there was an understanding from Congress that, hey, these people need help. These Uber drivers and hair salon folks and all the people out there on contract needed help. It took us 4 weeks working literally around the clock to be able to get that program set up and started to get money into people's pockets right at the end of April. So let's say that we were given this task to create this brand new program that they were debating up in the legislature to help these essential workers. If it would have taken us 4 weeks to do that, and frankly, it might have taken a little bit longer because it's actually a more complicated process, then we would have gotten done with it on Christmas. And all the money has to be out the door by the 28th. So the timing was not there. It just was impossible for us to be able to do this. I know that they're talking about doing something in the regular legislative session, which is coming up. And so we look forward to engaging with legislators about how they want to, you know, make a more detailed proposal that would allow us to, you know, have a successful program. But I would also say this. The most important thing we can do for those essential workers is continue to support raising the minimum wage. That is the most important thing, because these are the folks that are, you know, making under $15, under $12 an hour. The minimum wage is going up on January 1st. It'll be going up to $10.50 an hour statewide, and that is also a responsibility of our department to enforce. But I would just really encourage a lot of those legislators that were talking about this to really continue to support making sure that the minimum wage gets to a level where we can make sure that that level reflects the value of these essential workers, because every single person in the government has so much thanks for all of the grocery store employees and the janitors, everyone busting their tails during this thing. We know how valuable they are. We know how valuable their work is, and that's why we're really wanting to continue to raise the minimum wage so that that value is reflected in their paychecks.
575-646-2212 is the number to call. Bill McCamley, Workforce Solutions Secretary, on the line to answer your questions about the employment situation across the state of New Mexico. Bill, would you say that it has changed as we've moved through this pandemic in significant ways? Say from the beginning, from the first few months when things were pretty strongly restricted, and then to the summer months, and now back into that more restrictive phase, have you seen that flow of unemployment numbers change, you know, as a direct result of that as we've moved through the pandemic, or has it kind of remained somewhat consistent?
No, it's changed. So we had a little over 150,000 people on the unemployment rolls in the middle of June. That was our high number. And from there, it started going down consistently but slowly. I think on the 16th of November, we had about 104,000 people on. And so the number did come down a pretty significant amount. Now, obviously, it's gone back up again because of the two-week pause in the economy. But we're hoping is that as the COVID numbers do come down, and they are consistently falling, the governor talked about that in her press conference yesterday, we're hoping that we can get more people back out into the workforce. But once again, that is going to be determined by how many people wear masks, how many people don't gather in groups, all those things that really help us fight the spread of the virus.
Wayne is holding with a question. Good afternoon, Wayne. Welcome to Voice of the Public.
Oh, thank you. My question is concerning putting money into people's hands. Is there any possibility about eliminating the income tax on Social Security?
So that would be a question for your legislators. They can, at least at a state level, make that decision. But I have not heard that come up as a discussion point among legislators, but that's who you want to have that conversation with.
Okay, well, and the accompanying question would have been eliminating the state tax on retirement income. Again, that, as you said, would be the for the legislature. It just seems that in both instances, it certainly would help retirees in both cases, and it may make New Mexico more attractive to have more retired people move to the state, especially from out far west. They pay real estate taxes and sales tax, but they don't have a impact on the school system. So,
well, Wayne, I tell you what, why don't we hold that question, too, for Dr. Peach, who is going to be coming up in the second half of the show, and he can kind of address that in terms of its overall economic impact.
Okay. How does that sound? If you would just mention, share that thought with him, and I'll be listening to you.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank you, Wayne.
You are welcome.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And it looks like we have actually another Wayne on the next line holding with a question for Secretary McCamley. Hi, Wayne. Good afternoon.
I'm here.
It's, could we say it's Wayne's World this afternoon on Voice of the Public?
Wayne's World. Great.
Go ahead with your question.
Bill, are you there?
I am, Wayne.
Hi, I'm Wayne Huber, and I know Bill McCamley well. I've worked for all of his campaigns for the last 50 years. So hi, Bill. Glad to hear your voice. I just plugged in a few minutes ago, so maybe you answered this question, maybe you didn't. But my question is, how do we confirm that we get the $1,200? I think it goes to, how many people does it go to? Everyone in the state, or what's the deal?
So the $1,200 from the state plan that was put into place in the special legislative session is going to people who are on the unemployment system or who were on the unemployment system and had their benefits exhaust. And so far we have rolled out about 120,000 payments this week. It takes between 1 and 3 business days for those to go to accounts. We've heard reports that a lot of people are getting those, which is very, very good. But those are for people on the unemployment system. It's not a stimulus check that's going to every New Mexican, like the big one that came out with the federal government back in the spring.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you have to be on New Mexico unemployment in order to receive this $1,200.
That is correct.
I see. Okay. Got it.
Sorry, Wayne. All right. Thank you very much for your call. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. And you mentioned, Bill, some the folks whose benefits have exhausted. You know, tell us what we're doing for those folks beyond this $1,200 payment. What can they expect moving forward?
Well, it's going to depend on what Congress does. And the way this works is that if you're on the standard unemployment system, you're a W-2 worker, and you haven't been able to get back into work, you have 26 weeks of benefits in the regular system. There's an additional 13 weeks you get from one of the federal extensions that was passed in the CARES Act, and we have another extension from a program that was actually put in place during the Great Recession. Unfortunately, some of these folks have been on the system for a while and are seeing their benefits be cut off. The only way those are going to be able to be extended is if Congress says, hey, we can extend the extension and give people more weeks of eligibility. The same thing is true for the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, PUA, for all the self-employed folks. They either get 39 weeks of unemployment benefits or the program runs out at the end of the year. And so unless Congress extends both those two programs right now, people's benefits would unfortunately stop. That's going to be up to Congress. For help, we generally say, hey, look, go to newmexico.gov. That is the governor's site, and there are resources on there for help with everything from mental health to food to information on the eviction moratorium, which is still in place. So if you get an eviction notice, you should be able to go to court, and if you can't afford to pay it, the protections are there. You can make that argument. There's also rental assistance available through the New Mexico Mortgage Finance Authority. But go to newmexico.gov, and all those resources are there.
I forwarded an email to you I wanted to address now from someone who was asking about, it seems like, you know, there are people falling through the cracks for various reasons, and she was asking on behalf of her tenants who were having trouble getting rental assistance, who haven't been able to pay their rent, and who have been unemployed, and she's asking, you know, how do they get help? And I just wanted you to have an opportunity to take a look at that and see if you could, you know, I know you can't address their specific situation, but in general terms, what is this representative of a lot of people, a lot more than we know?
Yeah, so remember, unemployment has rules. You can't just apply for unemployment and get on it without meeting the requirements that unemployment has. So, for instance, to be qualified for unemployment, you actually have had to have worked a certain amount and earned a certain amount of wages over the last 18 months. Furthermore, if you leave your job and you don't, there's not what we call good cause associated with that. And good cause in terms of unemployment means there's something that the employer did to you. You had an abusive supervisor, workplace safety conditions were not good. They wanted to transfer you to another town. Those kind of changes would allow you to leave. But for the most part, unemployment is for people that get laid off through no fault of their own. If you choose to leave your job and you can't show this good cause that I just talked about, then you're not eligible for unemployment. Furthermore, on the standard system, like I said, you have to work a certain amount over the past 18 months. And so you can't just decide, hey, I'm leaving my job for because I'm scared of life or because I want to go look for another job and then go get unemployment. That's not what the system is set up for. I will say, though, that the governor's office, as well as a lot of other folks around the state, have been working very, very hard to make sure that resources are available for everybody. And so part of that CARES Act money, which was repurposed, and like I said, part of that came to us, another part went to the New Mexico Mortgage Finance Authority. So if you need rental assistance, what I just do is I Google NM space MFA, and then rental assistance. And if you actually go to the first website that shows up on a Google search, it will take you to a page where you can apply for rental assistance. It's up there right now. So that's a good way to look at getting rental assistance. I would also say that if you go to our YouTube site, youtube.com/NMDWS, we actually did with the Lieutenant Governor and some experts from around the state a town hall back in August, and one of the people on there was a guy named Serge Martinez, who is a housing expert at the UNM Law School, and he answers a lot of people's questions about what the process is for contesting an eviction notice, and there's a whole video on that, so we encourage people to watch that as well.
575-646-2212. We just have a few minutes left with Bill, so if you have a question for Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley, call now, and we'll get that in. And in our last few minutes, Bill, will it be 2 years for you in this role next month?
Yeah.
What has this journey been like for you?
The last 10 months have been absolutely heartbreaking. And it's the hardest thing that I have ever done. The amount of people that are in need is a lot of folks out there that need help. And we're doing everything we can to try to help as many people as we can. And I think that's one of my biggest frustrations about this whole thing with Congress. I don't know if they understand the desperation of many folks out there right now, and the need that they've got to get help so that they don't go homeless, so that they can afford food and they can pay their utilities and maybe get their kids a little gift for Christmas. I mean, this stuff is really important. And, the only thing I can say is the staff at our department, the staff in state government have been working as hard as they can. I mean, all hours, all the time, it never stops. And our people continue to answer the bell to help people. And that's what government should be doing. That's our job. And we're not perfect. And, you know, the system is clunky. And the volume has meant that, you know, there are some people that sometimes we're not able to help right away. But please know that everyone is just working literally as hard as they know how to help as many people as possible. And, you know, the message to Congress is please do something now. And the message to people is help control this virus. Please help control this virus by not gathering for Christmas, by wearing your mask when you have to go out, by not going out unless you absolutely have to. And if we can do that, we can get, you know, people back to work, which is what we want to be doing in our department. And we've been kind of all unemployment all the time for most of the last year, but we want to get people working. And we can do that when it gets safe. But it's up to all of us to contribute to being safe. And we really encourage people to do the right thing in that regard.
Where are the bright spots for the employment picture in New Mexico right now?
Yeah, well, we do know that there are going to be four main areas of job need over the next decade in the state. And you're not seeing a decrease in any of these, actually, even with COVID. So we need healthcare workers. We needed healthcare workers before the pandemic. If people didn't understand how vital these heroes are in our society, these nurses and docs and paramedics and all the folks in the healthcare industry, they better damn well know that now, because these people are literally lifesavers. And if you want to go be a nurse, if you want to go be a doctor, you will get a job and you will help your community. There's also three other areas that we know are going to be needing employees, the IT sector, and STEM. So we need engineers, we need computer scientists, we need programmers, a lot of internet security employees are going to be needed. So if you want to go and get a boot camp education in a coding language or go get your degree in computer science, you're going to get a job, because we need a lot of those folks. Furthermore, we need construction people, electricians and carpenters and sheet metal workers, all those folks in those skilled trades. They're all basically working if they want to right now. The construction hasn't stopped, and we need in our communities those folks with those skills. And then the last thing we need are educators. We need teachers. We need early childhood teachers, and we need folks in the K-12 system. And so if you ever thought about wanting to go be a teacher, we need you, and now's the time. So those are the real four areas that we know are going to continue to need good quality workers. You can make a decent paycheck in all four of those areas. And, you know, just as importantly, you're going to help your community do better and grow in the right ways.
Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley, I know it's been tough. Thank you for the work that you're doing tirelessly every day and every night. And thank you for joining us this afternoon.
You're very welcome. Everybody keep your heads up out there.
All right. Happy holidays, Bill. And joining us next at 1:33 is economist Dr. Jim Peach. Welcome back to KRWG Public Radio.
Thank you.
Good to have you back.
Glad to be back.
So it's been a few months since we did a big outlook show on the economy and what we could expect, you know, moving through the pandemic. Has anything happened so far that you expected?
Hello?
Hi, Dr. Peach. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great.
We're in the midst of a question. Go ahead.
That's right. So we had you on a few months ago talking about, you know, the big picture and what we might expect through the course of this pandemic. And my first question was, has anything that you expected happened?
Well, yes. Yes. And you just listened to Secretary McCamley explain that we've still got 120,000 people collecting some form of unemployment. It's just about exactly what I expected to happen. We've got a long road to get back, and it is absolutely the case that it is the course of the virus that will determine how quickly we can get back.
Do you think that the county-by-county approach is an appropriate one? I guess the question that came to my mind was, we've heard Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham say over and over that the lack of a national, cohesive national approach, you know, has been tough on all of the states and has made it difficult to control this virus. So I wonder, why then would a county by county approach be successful?
Well, to the extent that we don't do a lot of cross county commuting, a county by county approach seems to make sense to me. It is not entirely inconsistent with the lack of a national mandate. The governor is correct about that. But the national mandate could say something like, if you live in a county that has X positivity rate or X number of cases, do the following.
Let's talk.
We have no national guidance right now.
Right. Interestingly enough, there was a comment on a big story about the latest Russian hack is making national news, and the president hasn't said a word about it. But one commentator said, "Well, the president hasn't said a word about the virus for a very long time now. That's now killing over 3,000 Americans every day." And so let's talk a little bit, like we did last time that you were here with us, in terms of what we're seeing kind of on the world stage regarding where the rest of the world is and where we are.
Well, in terms of the virus, we're, of course, in terrible shape compared to most other places. We have roughly 4% of the world's population and 18 or 19% of cases and deaths. We haven't done a good job, that's clear. That's also reflected in the economy. We would be doing much, much better if we had the virus loads of, say, Canada or Japan.
Seems like the list is pretty long that you could
go. Or New Zealand or Singapore or China or lots and lots of places.
Right. A real tragedy here. As New Mexico legislators just came out of that special session, they were there to allocate the CARES Act funding. Let's talk a little bit about how much that will help bolster New Mexico's economy for at least, what, the next few weeks maybe?
For the next few weeks, that'll help. But the real key to that is whether or not we get another, they're calling it a stimulus bill. It's not really stimulus. It's a relief bill out of Congress. And we don't know.
As you watch these negotiations take place back and forth, I regretted not actually asking Bill for his opinion on this too. But where do you think the compromise, that it's okay to compromise, and where is it not okay to compromise? What should they be coming with?
They should do whatever it takes to get a bill through. From my perspective, it should be much larger than the $900 billion that they're talking about. It should be something almost the size of the original CARES Act, $2 to $2.5 trillion. And in terms of compromise, you know, this process should really be an all-time embarrassment for Congress. The House passed a bill in May. This is December, the last time I checked. And they're still arguing about this. Put that stuff aside. Put aside the liability issue. That's a false issue in any event. There haven't been a lot of lawsuits about COVID. And, it's not clear that anybody suing over catching COVID in the workplace would win if the employer had been following the guidelines.
Right. The way I heard one legislator put it, we don't have a pandemic of lawsuits.
That's correct.
Right.
I heard that phrase also. And it's correct. So why delay helping millions of Americans who don't have enough money to eat or to pay the rent? Let's get this done. We can afford to do this.
Well, and you mentioned you thought it should be larger, and the HEROES Act was originally pretty close to the CARES Act. So it seems like where we are now, from just trying to follow along, is that we're talking about $900 billion, no help for state and local communities. They've taken the liability issue maybe off the table for now, giving Americans a $600 check and extending unemployment benefits at $300. It sounds like most of the compromising here has really been done by Democrats along the way.
Yes. And, you know, you hardly need me. You're well informed about all of this.
I try to keep up, but it's hard.
I watch this pretty closely, and it is beyond me why they have not been able to reach a deal yet. And on top of that, they haven't reached a deal on funding the federal government.
Right. Well, now, Mitch McConnell could have made a deal, right? I mean, is it really in his hands, ultimately?
Yes. Yes, he could have made a deal.
So, here we are. Now, let's talk about how the state, you know, has had to kind of pick up the slack here, obviously with funding from the CARES Act for the first time around. So that shows us how important that aid to state and, you know, local governments has been. I mean, it's life-saving money right now for people.
Yes. And, you know, surprisingly, New Mexico is not in as bad a shape in its state budget as some other states. You know, California and New York, for example, are facing billions and billions of dollars that they don't have the revenue to pay for.
And New Mexico has a permanent fund, and you're not really talking about that when it comes to the basic economic health of the state. That's kind of hidden away. But that permanent fund is, what, about $7 billion?
Yes, there are actually two permanent funds, and they total up to about $20 billion. But the general fund gets the earnings from the permanent fund, the average of the last 5 years. So the permanent fund already contributes about $1 billion a year to state revenue. There is a rainy day fund that was established in 2017, and we have about 25% of the state's budget in that fund, and that can be tapped much easier than either of the permanent funds.
Do you have any idea what the discussions are around, you know, the likelihood going into the next legislative session that we'll be talking about using some of those funds, or you know, how legislators could best help New Mexicans who are suffering in the new year?
I think the most important thing that the legislature could do would be to enact changes to our tax system so that we are less dependent on revenues from the oil and gas industry. And that industry has been highly volatile from the beginnings of the industry. And every few years we face some sort of a problem because the price of oil is down. No one expected, really, for oil prices to rebound like they have.
Mm-hmm.
we're doing much better than we thought we would be doing. But it hasn't addressed the long-term problem. In terms of the short-term problem, I think we're really at the mercy of Congress. We're at the mercy of the federal government.
575-646-2212, Professor Emeritus Dr. Jim Peach on the line with us to talk about the economic picture moving through what we hope is, you know, the rest of this terrible time with the pandemic. Obviously, we're all buckled up for a few more months at least, while we all wait with bated breath to see those vaccines get rolled out to the general public. And hopefully get back to our normal lives sooner rather than later. But I think that this thing has certainly dragged on far longer than most of us thought, for sure. I mean, going back to last March, I guess I'm too optimistic sometimes, but definitely thought this would be a shorter term problem than what we have seen. And it's just been shocking, really, in this fall wave of the virus to see how quickly we have lost how so many more lives in this exponential nature. You know, obviously the cost of allowing a pandemic to rule the day is greater in the end than what it takes, I think, by the examples that you used from other countries to control the virus and reopen our economies.
Absolutely. And one thing that most people don't think about, we lost far more jobs by April of this year than we did during the Great Recession from 2008 to 2010. It took us, New Mexico, a decade to regain the level of employment that we had in December 2007. Which was before the start of the Great Recession, took us a decade to recover. And we lost more jobs than we ever did in the Great Recession. It was just highly unlikely that the economy would bounce back in only a couple of months or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take us quite a while. One example is tourism. We had nearly 100,000 people working in tourism, in the hotels, restaurants, casinos, and the like. And we lost 25,000 of those jobs. And it's going to be a while before that comes back. We're going to all have to feel safe before those jobs are going to be able to come back.
Yeah, before people feel comfortable.
Sure.
Traveling.
I'd love to be on the road.
Right. They say at one point there was a scientific study that said that the most beneficial part of your vacation is actually the planning stage. So perhaps we should all spend a little time planning our next vacation, and perhaps that would make us feel a little bit better. But obviously there are some folks who are suffering beyond what anybody feels like they should. I want to know what you think in terms of the transition so that we're about to go through in terms of the overall picture of our economy from the Trump administration to a Biden administration. How do you think things will look different?
The first thing is I think that President-elect Biden is already addressing the pandemic directly and openly and forcefully, and that's something we haven't seen. That's a good sign, because we really do need to put a halt to this virus before the economy will come back. I think President Biden will be somewhat more aggressive about trying to get not only relief, but a genuine stimulus out to the economy. That's going to depend on what happens in the Senate The Senate could still block that. But economic events take a while to occur.
Mm-hmm.
The first few months of the Biden administration are going to be rough because we're still going to be mm-hmm. suffering from the virus. And then I think after that, we'll start to improve considerably. By the second half of next year, and I'm not alone in this, it's almost a consensus forecast, a lot of economists think that we'll start to really improve the second half of 2021.
Fingers crossed. 575-646-2212. It's nice to hear words like consensus, though. I'll be honest, because, you know, it seems like if the experts all pretty much agree, it makes us feel a little bit better.
The experts have a herd instinct, and they talk to each other, they all kind of say the same thing, but that doesn't make them correct.
Well, we'll hope you are. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call with your question for economist Dr. Jim Peach. There was a story out last week or so about New Mexico, which makes sense, having kind of the slowest recovery of the states in terms of jobs because of the strict restrictions in this state. When you look at New Mexico compared to other states, does it make sense to be talking about economic recovery at this point as we're just kind of enveloped in this fall wave of the virus? What's your take on that?
Well, first, I don't think we're suffering because of the restrictions. We're suffering because the virus came back and came back in a big way. The semi-shutdown in the second half of November is already showing up. We reached a peak in cases, and that's declining, and we're better off for having shut down. If we had not shut down, who knows what the caseload might have been. I pretty much think those restrictions were appropriate.
I want to get back to kind of that topic, but we're now into our final few minutes here. We're going to have to bring you back and Bill too for a full hour next time. But you mentioned taxes, and I didn't want to let that let the hour or the half hour go by without asking you from Wayne, who had called while Bill was on the air, and he was curious about taxes on Social Security and retirement income in terms of the state, and whether economists like you would say that it would be a good idea to change tax policy in that regard.
Right now, actually, there is a bill to eliminate our income tax on Social Security in the previous legislative session, and it didn't get very far. That would cost us about $75 million in revenue. The argument for doing that is that there are only about a dozen states that tax Social Security, trying to attract retirees. The argument against it, against removing it, is very, very simple. We'd lose the revenue,
mm-hmm.
and we need the revenue right now. There was a time... through the early 80s, we did not tax Social Security. Former Governor Carruthers signed that legislation into effect. And at the time, that seemed like a reasonable thing to do. That's a difficult call, but we need to look at the entire tax system and generate enough revenue to perform the basic services of state government without so much dependence on the highly volatile oil and gas industry.
John has been holding with a question for Dr. Peach. John, thank you for calling, and thank you for your patience. Good afternoon.
Sure. Thank you so much. Enjoyed listening to both of you today. A question. With the Senate holding up $75 per month now, and you look at 8 months of trying to get funding directly to the American public, we're one of the few first world countries that are not directly supporting their people. And I just am exasperated by the fact that these senators who have millions of dollars forget about people like in rural and New Mexicans, the tribal folks. When are they going to get this message? What do we need to do as a people to begin to get them to respond to actually say, you're here to help us?
We would need to elect a new Senate.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that they reelected Mitch McConnell. It's like I can't send enough money to Georgia to get those two Democrats elected.
Well, but you know what the problem is? It's deadlock in the U.S. Senate.
Right, but they're there to represent the people. It seems that they have completely and utterly and totally forgotten about that. The Republicans want to protect businesses from all lawsuits that don't exist. When you have millions of people that don't have money, can't pay their rent, can't get groceries, and are going to be thrown out of their house.
Without even trying to be political here, I think it's disgraceful what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe they'll reach a deal on a small relief package this weekend, and that would be a good thing.
But this is the greatest problem facing this country since the Great Depression, and they've done nothing in 8 months. That's absurd.
Well, they, you know, we did pass the original CARES Act of $2.5 billion, and that was a good thing. We need to do that again, about that same magnitude.
It certainly is frustrating, John, and you know I know that others listening are sharing your level of it at this point. So we appreciate your call. Did you have a further question? We're just getting short on time here with Dr. Peach, but I didn't want to interrupt you if you had another question to ask.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is when you take a look at the economic impact, what's the cost of all of these people that are going to the hospitals and getting medical care that could have been paid to help people avoid having to use the medical care? I mean, I have over a dozen friends that have contracted this disease, and I have over three dozen friends around the world that have contracted this disease. And they've done things in other countries very differently about trying to help support and to get the medical care, because there's a dollar figure associated with that that people don't even talk about.
There,
you know, what are we going to do about that? We're spending money there as opposed to...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Dr. Peach.
Well, there's a huge cost, and nobody has calculated what that is yet. And certainly we've not done a good job about this.
I wanted to get back to the economies of, say, neighbor states like New Mexico and Texas that took two very different approaches. And you suggested that you thought New Mexico's approach was a more effective one. So we can look, you know, right down the street. I'm an El Paso resident, born and raised there, and to see what has happened in El Paso has been shocking and terrifying and heartbreaking and so very upsetting. But would you say that Texas can sit back and say, but look at our economy. Look how well our economy is doing as a result of our approach.
Texas had a very different economy than New Mexico before this started. For one thing, it is much larger and much more diverse. We are concentrated in the three industries, oil and gas, tourism, and public sector employment. Texas is not so highly concentrated. Texas has been hurt badly during this thing. But it's an entirely different situation.
Are there some examples that New Mexico could be following or should be following to diversify the way Texas has done?
Well, part of it is that we are a much smaller state than Texas. We have 2 million people. There are that many people, more than that many people, in Houston.
Sure.
And so the opportunities to do that are more limited in New Mexico.
It is almost 2 o'clock.
Go ahead.
Oh, please finish your sentence.
I was just going to say I can't remember a governor, and I've been here 40 years, who didn't want and didn't try various measures to try to diversify the economy.
Mm-hmm. And it seems just like we're constantly talking about that every time we meet. We discuss the need to diversify the economy. Well, we're coming up on 201 now, so it is going to be time for NPR News and for Leora Zeitlin to take over next with Intermezzo by request. But Dr. Jim Peach, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Happy holidays.
And thank you, and happy holidays to you as well. Stay safe.
Thank you for joining us for Voice of the Public. Thanks to Anthony Porras and Jacob Lockwood, our engineers today. Guys, I saved a little bit of time at the end for you this time. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon on KRWG Public Media.